Today I'm talking to Dr. Rachel Windham, and this woman has single-handedly restored my faith in the medical system. She is incredibly honest, open, and willing to learn. You know, she's willing to go where other people don't go. She's willing to, you know, dig deeper. And she does it all with grace and ease. She's an incredible woman, and I'm so excited to bring her to you today. We're going to talk about health, emotions, vulnerability, anxiety, and really living your truth. This is a deep one, and you know I love to go deep. So may I present to you Dr. Rach. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
If we put me on a page with all of my accolades, I would have once said that I am a doctor, I'm a GP, and I'm a naturopath. And I stood behind that, and that was my identity for a very long time. Now I would say that I'm a work in progress, and I'm a free woman, I'm an adventurer and an explorer, and I love to really connect and get in touch with people and find out where they're hurting, where they're suffering, and to create some kind of change in their life that can lead them back on a journey of health. So I came to that in the last 2 years, probably. So when I was growing up, we lived in a home where we grew veggies and had chickens, and, you know, we took herbal tonics when we were sick, and I really thought that was normal. I thought that that's how people, you know, looked after their health. And we would make sure we moved our bodies. My mum and my aunts were all very aware of, you know, there was more to us than just bones and skin, that there was a spirit and a soul, and that, you know, there were different philosophies and beliefs, but we always had a lot of meditation or self-awareness or, you know, different things. I guess the child of the 70s, everyone's going through all exploration. So when I finished school, I was really interested in health, and I started studying naturopathy. So I did naturopathic medicine before I did general practice. And I experienced, you know, a career path that I guess a lot of natural health practitioners would follow. So I worked within health food shops and learned all the products and learned to, you know, experience people's questions and concerns. And that was really valuable. I also worked with bodywork. So I had a couple of part-time jobs where I could do massage therapy. And that's beautiful as well. You get to understand the physical body. And then I worked at the Golden Door in the health retreat, and I still come back to retreat work now. And I think more now at my age that retreat work is a full immersion where you can really learn, experience, and change your health. So after doing all that, I opened a naturopathic clinic thinking, you know, I've completed all of this. I have my degree and I have experience, and I started seeing patients. And the place I chose to open my practice was in a really big combined general practice. So it was a very, you know, orthodox standard place. It wasn't surrounded by other integrative practitioners. There was probably 8 GPs. There was a psychologist, you know, different allied health people there, and me. And I thought, oh, this would be perfect. I'll be the, you know, the adjunct to this. I can do the naturopathy and the GPs will love that. And I realized that it actually really didn't work like that. So, you know, this was late 90s. And naturopathic medicine was very fringe. It was still considered to be very alternate. There was a lot of distrust, and there was a very, very strong distrust really from the medical community as much as from patients. And I think, you know, people were really seeking alternate therapies. So they were unwell and they weren't getting better, and their GPs weren't offering them, you know, answers that they needed. So they were looking and they were seeking, and they were starting to look for nutritional answers and supplements. So I did that for a little while, and I had a gorgeous colleague, another GP, who said, I really want to do what you do. I really love all this supportive therapy. She could see the patients getting better. And I was frustrated. I couldn't order tests and I couldn't speak with specialists and I couldn't just get the whole picture. I felt like I would only do a little bit of work, and often other GPs would cut down that information, say, oh, what a load of rubbish. Oh, you don't need to do that. And it was always this to and froing with patients. I didn't have that complete ability to really help people as I wanted. So looking back now, I think, I don't know if that was a wise or a really crazy decision, but I went back to med school. So I originally had applied and I got in, and then my first little darling daughter came along. So I had a little one and I had the opportunity to go to med school, and that's a really huge decision to make at that time. You know, a husband and a new business, and goodness, do you do that or do you not? So I put it off for a year and a half, and I thought, no, that's not my place. I need to be a mummy and I need to just have balance and just plod along and do the best I can there. And, you know, that need and that drive and that passion didn't go. So I took that step and plunged in, and actually, luckily, they built a medical school just around the corner, you know, kindly. So I didn't have to travel or go to Brisbane or Sydney. And so I went back, and by then I'd had my second daughter, and we just all fuddled along. And we went through med school, and then I did an intern year and a residency year and a couple of years in the hospital, and then into GP training. And, well, most of 10 years disappeared very quickly. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back in a position where I work in general practice and use integrative medicine and have my naturopathy philosophy in background. That's a very long story of how I got all those credentials, qualifications, and why. And I'm really so fortunate, I feel, to have that sort of education. But, you know, year before last, probably, you know, close to where we met, I'd got to a point where I'd pushed so hard to do that and had worked in an environment that's really hard and had completely burnt myself out, and hit 40. I'd had an experience where I'd cared for my close friend who had a 3-year battle with breast cancer, and she lost that fight at that time. And I think everything really just came to a point, and I thought, why am I striving so hard? What am I pushing? What am I trying to prove? You know, is it ever going to be enough? And have I done enough for my girls? And you just fall in a big hole sometimes. And I felt like I was failing. So I felt like everything was overwhelming and I couldn't keep it up. I'm actually amazed that I can just speak so openly now like this and have that vulnerability, because I can still feel that feeling bubble up while we talk. So I experienced a panic attack, well, a building anxiety up to a situation of panic where I was, you know, in a really responsible role. I was admitting cardiac patients. I was working in the busiest emergency department in the country, and I had to shut the door and lock myself in a stores cupboard, and had an overwhelming, you know, terrifying experience where I couldn't live like this. I couldn't do this anymore, and there was too much responsibility and fear. With a little guidance and a few helping hands, I finally made the decision to actually walk away, to quit, to just leave, to heal and take time out. And I decided to take 12 months for myself. Yeah, it was really, really scary. For me, that felt like my biggest failure. It felt like I had just not managed to do it. And I went into fetal position and curled up in my bed and cried to everyone and said, oh, this is so bad, it's so terrible. And you know, in perspective, it really wasn't. There was no huge trauma or loss in our family. There was no, you know, everyone was well and we were secure and financially. And, you know, you can justify all of that in your head sometimes and discount the fact that you're in a bad place. So I thought I'd have 12 months of this beautiful life, that I was free of work, and I thought all these lovely mummies that don't work, oh, I could just take my kids to school, I could go to yoga, cook organic food, and oh, this is just going to be bliss. And I was so shocked. It was horrible. There was me and just me and my little voice in my head and all the time in the world to just experience it. And it took a long time to come out of that. So I'm so lucky that I got that opportunity, and I've learned a lot, and I'm nowhere near where I want to be, but I'm doing everything from such a true and authentic and vulnerable place. And I tell you now that I've come back into clinic, so I do 2 days a week. While I was going through that really hard time, I decided to just self-indulgently write and blog and start a bit of a website. And I thought I'd maybe interview or do some videos, or it was just a bit of a creative outlet. So my life had never had any creativity. It was very structured and controlled. And so I didn't know where really that was leading, but it developed these incredibly strong, powerful, healing, supportive friendships and relationships. And I thought I was joining a business group. I didn't think I was going in for serious
I soul searching. I think there's some similarities. I always find similarities in every guest that comes on. And, you know, I've not been backwards in coming forwards in the fact that I suffer from anxiety, and I always have. And sometimes it's more debilitating than other times. And, you know, whenever I'm doing an interview, like just keeping it real, whenever I'm doing an interview, I have to go and have a crap first because I'm that nervous. And then I have this little routine that I do. I spray lavender oil around. I light a candle and I set an intention for the call. I take some rescue remedy. I pour a glass of water with some apple cider vinegar in it. You know, like I have my little routine that I do because it allows me to function through fear. You know?
Yeah. And I'm so glad to hear you say that. Yeah.
And, you know, because everybody suffers from it. And most people are there with their big bravado on, you know, or too scared to actually do anything or bravadoing their way through it. And neither of them really allows you to connect to you and what's really important to you, I think. I really relate to the part where you said that you had the 12 months off and you thought, oh, this is going to be amazing. You know, I'm going to be one of those yoga yummy mummy types. And then just like, bam, it's you and you and nobody, you know? And that's scary when that first time that you come up against yourself is really scary. I remember when I moved to Nambucca, I had that moment. Actually, probably when I left work, you know, I left a job to start work by myself. I had this romantic notion that it would be me and I'd be going out to lunch with the ladies and I'd be going to the gym and you're doing yoga and, you know, like, no, I felt like a prisoner in my own house with an evil bitch telling me, you know, you have to work. You have to work. It's 9 to 5. Like, what are you doing with your time, you know? So, yeah, I totally just relate to a lot of your story. And I think sometimes we define ourselves by our position in the world or the way we think people perceive us. And I imagine, like, for you, you had been the doctor. So then if you remove yourself from that situation, then who are you beyond that? Is that kind of what you felt you were coming up against when you removed
yourself? Yeah, absolutely. And that nasty bitch, like you said, my gosh. And I think when you stay so busy and outwardly focused, I've just spent a week down learning from Patricia King, who is just the most incredibly gorgeous woman who 30 years ago developed or set up the Quest for Life Foundation. So she does healing work with, you know, it started with those suffering with terminal illness, and it sort of stretched out to every facet of loss and heartache and disease and depression. And she talks about all the D's, so divorce, drugs, you know, it goes on. But it's where you get the opportunity to actually have to face that. You go, holy shit, like I don't have any more time now. I can't keep busy with my hobbies or my job or outwardly focused, you know, dressing up so that I can face the world or go to lunch or, yeah, that, I mean, they're all beautiful things we can experience when we come from a whole place. But, you know, when people face hardship, then it gets real. And that nasty bitch, as you said, which we all have some degree of. And, you know, it sent me on a journey back through where does that start? Where does that little voice tell you that, you know, you're not good enough as you are, that you've got to earn it, that you've got to work hard, that you have to, you know, and it's have to and shoulds and all these words. And if you stop, and I journaled for a few weeks of just what words happened before I even opened my eyes, like when you're conscious in the morning and you think the first thing was, oh, God, can we do this? We're going to be late. We're not going to be organized. You're going to get No, and the doubt and the fear and the it's really, really confronting.
It is.
And I've got this gorgeous counselor, psychologist that works closely with Quest, and she reminds me often, she says, now, would you speak to your children if they stub their toe or if they dropped a glass? Would you be going, oh, you dumb, stupid idiot?
Yeah. Like,
what did you do that for?
Yeah.
Like, that's not good enough. You wouldn't do that. You'd put your hand on their shoulder and you'd say, now, darling.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
If they're crying, hurt, it's okay. Now, darling. And she does that often. She actually puts her hand on her own shoulder and says, now, darling. No,
that's nice.
Okay. And it's gorgeous. And I do that sometimes. Even, you know, this morning I thought, oh, I'm going to get on this call and it's going to be great. You know, I love Carly. We can have this awesome conversation. And the voice comes up going, what are you going to say? You know, who wants to hear what you've got to say? And instead of that, oh, that nasty, we go, no, now, darling, you've got this. You can do this. This is awesome.
And that's the thing. Like I look at Mabel and I think so often – I won't say something. I'm getting better at this because I've been practicing it a lot lately. But, you know, I'll get an instinct on something and I won't verbalize it because I don't want to offend somebody's feelings or, you know, and I get this a lot with my close girlfriends. I'm kind of someone who has had a few good friends throughout my life. I had a lot of male friends when I was younger, and as kind of life happened, they got girlfriends and, you know, and I kind of went off on my own thing, and now they're all gone and doing their own thing in their own lives with their own families and all that kind of jazz. And I realized I didn't really have many great connections with women. I started the Office Collective and all that kind of jazz to kind of fill this community. And actually, I was going to mention this early because what actually happened with me was I signed up to B School, as you did yourself, and I found this, like, all of these connections that I'd been looking for that were like-minded and that were a little bit spiritual and that really got me, you know. I didn't feel like I had to censor parts of myself where I had really felt like that before. You know, I'd pull my angel cards out and I could see my friend's eyes rolling, you know. Oh, God, here she goes again. Where I do it with these, you know, with my friends now, and they're like, oh, let's do angel card readings, you know, like just for a bit of fun, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be angel cards, but just those kind of things. If I want to have a really deep conversation about the universe and you know, God within me and all kinds of weird stuff, I feel really at ease doing it with these new connections that I've made over the last few years. And I think that is, you know, it's played a big role in me being able to get to know me a bit better too, I think, you know.
Yeah,
and now, absolutely. now I am also more able, because I'm more friends with me, I'm more able to voice my opinion and to, you know, say what I think. Now I kind of preface things and I say, you know, this is coming from love, but here's what I'm picking up, you know. And then I apologize to my friends. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I think I overstepped the mark there. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to, you know. And they're like, dude, you were so spot on. And had I not trusted it, they wouldn't have had that breakthrough and I wouldn't have had the breakthrough that I've got this voice inside me and sometimes I need to listen to it, you know, and sometimes I need to trust that it's telling me the right thing and not listen to that other part of me that goes, shut the fuck up, seriously, she doesn't need to hear that, you're just making it up. And I think when I look at Mabel, I want her to stay in touch with that part of her. And the other thing I was going to say was when I suffered from depression and anxiety and I started moving my way through it, because I became acutely aware that I wouldn't be speaking to my 4-year-old me like that. So I went and cut my hair like this in the bob because I had a bob when I was 4. So it's a constant reminder when I look at myself that I'm still that girl, you know?
Yeah. I love that idea. There's one of the girls that I met too who'd done a lot of this work has a little photo of herself, and where she identifies with was an 8-year-old who had gone through a lot of trauma, and she puts that picture next to her bed and she says good morning every day. And they also mentioned, which I love the thought of, is reparenting yourself. And it's the idea that, you know, we've all experienced loss or, you know, some people much worse than others in neglect and trauma as children, but even just rejection and abandonment, even in normal functioning families.
Yeah, totally.
There's lots of really hurtful experiences. So going back and being able to be, like you say, truly responsive, not reactive, like not that part of you that comes from the fear and the emotions that you avoid. So if you sit with them, which is painful, but we talk about, you know, there's this house of emotion or mansion of emotions. And I have a girlfriend who's going through some really troubling times at the moment, and we just support each other by saying, you know, where are you today? And she goes, I'm just sitting in the life is shit room, and I'm just here today, and it is what it is. And, you know, when I'm ready, I'll just come back out and pick a better room.
Yeah.
And it's really lovely that you can teach your children that, especially that they can be in these what we consider negative emotions and be there, and it doesn't hurt you, and it only allows you to be really truly who you are. And then you stop reacting. I think that voice quietens down.
Yeah.
And you're not reacting from fear and anger because you know those feelings and they're okay. You can start to respond, like you say, from your real deep true intuition and share and heal and help people.
But absolutely.
That trust is, you mentioned that before, when you trust yourself or others. And, you know, one of the things that Petria teaches in there is that who do you have in your life that you can be your true real self with? And, you know, that's a big question if you really stop and ponder it, because even within your, you know, husband and wife relationship or with your children, or it's rare to have someone that you can show all of your, you know, darkness or truth and honesty, and that's going hard. But
yeah, totally. Because most people see one side of you. Even if, like, I consider myself to be a pretty open book, but in the privacy of my own home, sometimes I get super irritated and I might have a little bit of a tanty. I generally don't do that in public. But Mabel does it. She does it wherever the hell she wants. And I actually, like, I thought prior to having kids, I'd be like, you know, oh, stop behaving like that kind of thing. I don't know. You know, like, my kid's not going to have tantrums, and my kid's not going to. And now she does. And I find myself, you know, kind of challenged by it at times. But I also am like, okay, you know, it's okay if she's upset. It's okay if she's angry. It's okay if she thinks something's hilariously funny. Like, emotions are just emotions. We attach negativity and positive, you know, the negative and the positive stories to them. But really, they're just energy that we have to move through. And to say, or to say to someone, you know, stop crying, or like, calm down. No, like, just move through it. Go through it, you know, like, scream, cry, yell, punch, you know, punch a cushion, whatever you need to do to move through that energy, do that. You know, if you need to piss yourself laughing until you're bawling your eyes out, do that. Just move through it. And particularly, I think, because as a child, and I love my parents to bits, and, you know, we all are doing the best that we can as parents. And particularly now that I'm a parent myself, I totally see that. I'm going to fuck up Mabel in some way. I just hope, you know, she's here to have her own journey, and I can't control, you know, at some point she's going to hate me. That's just a given. And no, that's okay. I'm just doing the best I can, you know?
Yeah.
And I think same goes for my parents, you know, and they loved me, but, and they were trying to protect me from my feelings a lot of the time. And what ended up happening was I just swallowed them. All the time, swallowed the tears. Oh my God, tears are coming. Swallow them, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And eventually I swallowed everything down so much. It was like, and this is how I describe depression: suppress, 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 and then depress.
And that's a really powerful analogy of, and that's another way to understand that you have that emotion of feelings, which you can choose to go and stay in, or you have a volcano of them. And there's stuff down there. And when they explode, it's so out of proportion to what is really happening, because there's, you know, all these different feelings. You can't identify with them, and then you hate on yourself for reacting and behaving that way. And it is. I mean, every experience in life, but parenting is definitely one of the most confronting. And, yeah, you want to do your best all the time.
Totally. Totally.
It's interesting to, they talk about, you know, self-awareness, and it's just this relentless continuum, and it's really nice to get to a place where you know you can just let people see who you are. And you talked before about still getting nervous doing things, and I love to hear you say that, because you're so professional, you know, what you do. You think, oh, I'm the only one that goes through this, but you know what, you reading Brené Brown and Daring Greatly and some of her vulnerability work, and that really cracks you open. And to feel that we're all the same, we all get shit scared of most things every day, and it just depends on sort of how we manage them or how we show ourselves. But, yeah. you know, going back to working in health and having a clinic, and I was really afraid of going back to that place that, you know, when you're seeing death and loss and suffering, when you're a sensitive person and you have to put up really big barriers and not feel it, you think, how am I going to go back to being in that environment and help people and not suffer myself? And so I've had to work really hard on that. And I have those rituals as well. So I get up in the morning and I know I need at least an hour of peace. So I can't do the big rushy school run and race in there and just get there. I've got to have some music and meditate before and get myself in the right place. But there's a point where it comes to that you can be, well, I'm feeling more now, that you can be so real and vulnerable in what you're doing and so honest in, look, I don't know this right now, but let's find it together. Or, look, I need to tell you that you're not going to move through this until we can deal with some of this anxiety. And some people can't identify that they have any of that, and they're very confronted. And, you know, once I would have been very careful going into those places, but there's really no choice when you're in that position. So I'm still hopeful. I'm not all the way there yet, but to get to a point where your work builds you up and empowers and gives you energy, and it doesn't become something that you prepare for, do go really hard, and then you come back and have to recover. So yeah. A lot of people feel drained and exhausted from the work they do, and then they need a glass of wine or a, you know, decompress a pack of Tim somehow. Tams
or
yeah,
two.
Exactly. Yeah, sugar food, you know, addiction of any kind, or, you know, they're just, that's not a sustainable way to be. And I think that's one of our biggest causes of illness. Yeah. And we can talk about, you know, diet till the cows come home, and we can talk exercise and nutrition and different nutrients, and, you know, that's all detail. But unless you can get your emotional health in a way that, like you say, energy can move, and whatever that is for you, whether it's yoga or meditation or whether it's seeing a psychologist or counseling, or even if it's physical, if it's exercising just to get things going, then, yeah, you can find that place. So,
yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, I'm still looking for that thing, you know, that work that does that for me, that builds me up rather than kind of drains me. And I think, like, this podcast is something that is definitely supportive, but other areas of my work life still very much feel like work, you know, not necessarily. And I think, like, if you're looking for something that's going to be 100% ease and flow, you're probably barking up the wrong tree. But I'm still yet to find that one thing. I hate saying that. But, you know, like that thing that I'm naturally good at that I could integrate into work and have it all come together, you know?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have that with what you're doing now?
I think no, I'm aware that that's what I want, and I'm much more aware of the things that do become really draining, and I'm on that search also. And I have days where I stop in the middle of the day and think, why did that feel so bad? Like, what was I doing there that wasn't right? And I think having that awareness is enough. And we do have to do all the stuff we don't like to do. I mean, we still have to clean our toilet and hang out our washing, and you can do that with, like, oh, why am I doing this? I could be doing something so much better and, you know, bringing me excitement and joy. And but you can have discipline enough in your life where you just make these things non-negotiable, and you do them because you appreciate the outcome. And, you know, the things like emails, which is probably one of the biggest challenges when you're working for yourself or creating your own, you know, work, because I want to write a book. I've been writing outlines and writing chapters and writing bits and pieces, and, you know, it's beautiful when you can get in that creative flow and you can do some of that work, and that's what I keep hunting for, that buzz of that. But there's just so much else around the outside of that that is not the real work. It's, you know, what Julie Day and the Artist Way calls all the shadow work, the stuff that you've got to do that's work. And sometimes that can take over. You can be completely blocked at doing what you want to do, and you can be doing checking your emails 17 times a day and creating things that you know are not what you should be doing. And I can do that in my clinic as well. I can get caught up in the tests and trying to control it all and make it right and fix it because, you know, if you're a fixer, that feels like what you should be doing, yeah. Especially in the healing area. But you come back and go, look, I'm here to serve. I have to sit back and I can't control this. And all I can do is be there depending on what that person needs at that time. If it's just an ear to really, you know, I found that working with people more not acutely unwell with cancer and going through that really traumatic treatment time, that's a very specialized field. But afterwards, so this survivorship idea of people who've been touched by cancer and they've recovered and they're just left. They kind of just get, you know, lost in this limbo land of, all right, well, I'm out of the system. I have no support now, but I'm not the same person I was. And I'm scared. What if it comes back? Or these symptoms I have now, everyone treats me like a cancer patient. I'm not a human being again. So I'm finding that the more I get to work with people at that place, that's really so beautifully rewarding for me. Because you can just put a whole different perspective on who they are and what they need. So, yeah, it's a work in progress. I don't think that I thought that there was an answer for me that was out of clinical medicine. So when I left, I thought, well, I could write and maybe I could teach. But I was running away from that hard place of I have to listen to you and watch you be in pain or with disease or facing loss and I can't fix it. And I can feel that pain as well, but I still have a very valuable, important job to do in that. So going back, it's really great.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch.
Biggest fear.
Oh, gosh. That's a good one. A few weeks ago, I probably would have put that as an external answer, like the fear of not doing the great work that I wanted in my lifetime or becoming, you know, life being shortened early. But since being really deep into some of this Brené Brown's work, I think the biggest fear, which is a common thing, is not being enough. Just as you are, this fear that you are just not worthy and you're not enough. And it comes up hourly. So, yeah, that's my biggest fear.
Yeah. And that is pretty much, when you peel it back, every biggest fear, really.
It is. I know.
You know, and it's the reason that we don't put ourselves out there and that we don't, you know, it's not really about rejection. It's not really about failure. It's about worthiness.
Mm, yeah, we can say that, you know, that we're not loved enough or not, but all of those things will come back down to just we were born this perfection and this first self, and then we develop all these neural pathways, all these thoughts, and that they're automatic, and that we decide that that's who we are. And we identify ourselves by you are this and you are that. You don't do this very well, but you can do that really well. And that's set from early childhood. And we've now learned, well, I love the work with neuroplasticity now that we've learned that these change and it's so powerful. Well, one gentleman that comes to mind in his 80s who was a super successful, very wealthy man who became unwell, but his family really didn't like him. They had nothing to do with him. He had lots of children, grandchildren, and a really big extended family. He was a lonely, lonely man. And this was because he was angry. They all thought he was cranky and he had no connection. And he was able, you know, in his 80s to learn about some of this. And with neuroplasticity, you can retrain these reactive processes and change your brain so that you can be more of your true self.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have that opportunity every time.
Yeah.
But we're
in every minute.
That we're all these things we believe, but we're not actually truly just the beautiful, incredibly, you know, these creatures that were born.
Yeah. And we're divine. Like, you know, I just believe that, you know, if there is God, he lives within each of us. We are God. That sounds kind of crazy, maybe like maniacal or whatever, but, you know. okay, so
Every religion and belief system, and, you know, it all comes back to that, doesn't it? Even if you're a scientist, you look at the incredible miracle of conception and these two cells and life that comes from that. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So we just layer on all this other stuff over it. So, yeah, being able to come back to some of that truth is pretty awesome.
Totally. Biggest struggle?
Biggest struggle really through my life has been these big things, you know, coming to terms with being a mother. You know, when you're young and working through career processes and then, you know, making big changes, those points you get to where the pain's just too much. But I think the struggles now for me are just simple and little and daily and relentless. So things like, you know, just the monotony of school lunches and getting kids to activities. And, you know, I've spread my children out. I have an 18-year-old who's left school and she's in uni now, and that's beautiful, and one that's just really an early starting primary school. So I think we calculate our 24 years of school lunches, which is just makes you really frightened. So I struggle with that monotony of, you know, I have to do this every day. And then the have words come back in, and the should words, and the these are my choice. Like, I can pick my kids up and go traveling the world if I wish to. I can make it different if I wish to. But at the moment, we choose to send them to the beautiful school that they're at, and I make them lovely lunches and pack them and drive them there myself. And I'm so grateful for that. But the struggles still come in. Oh, you have to do this again. And there's more washing, and why do kids leave them on the floor every time? And, you know, why can't they find their school bag? Because you've done this every day and it's going to happen every day. It's not new. Why every morning they wake up and think, oh, this is all new. We have to go to school again. Yeah. So, you know, I'm impatient and I want to achieve things. I want to get things done. And so, you know, honestly, I don't sit and rest and do nothing. And I really struggle with that. And, you know, my girls all know that. They go, oh, what are we on now? Where are we going? What are we up to? And they, I think they pull me back, and they're that anchor, which is so beautiful, because I could have made myself a crazy person without that. So, yeah, I struggle with being just quiet and still and just taking things as they come instead of controlling them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. What have been your biggest lessons?
This is probably getting deep again. My biggest lessons, I would say, is, you know, in those places, which of course they're going to be, but in the places where somebody is facing serious disease, or, you know, they're suffering and they know that they're going to have to leave early and leave behind children, and there's so much raw and powerful emotion and pain. And to be in that place, you know, is quite threatening. But what I saw in there is the most amazing strength. Human nature just has so much beauty that I really believe when we're pushed into those situations that we have enough to deal with them, that I think knowing that we're inevitably all going to be faced with something like this in our life, like our parents, and, you know, we have a short time. And my lesson is that I've seen people in those places and they are at their most beautiful. They really find connection and they find peace, and they teach us, you know, so much humility and so much gratitude. And, you know, so they've been my beautiful lessons.
Yeah. Amazing. I used to ask what has been your biggest failure, but now I kind of ask, what does failure mean to you? You know, how does it show up, and that kind of stuff. So let's just talk about failure for a little bit.
Failure. Okay. And that's good, because you can identify your failures with what you think success is, and that's a hard thing to define. Like, is it a certain number in your bank account? Is it that you've, you know, achieved these degrees, or that you have a family and a car and a house? So to fail maybe for some people means you don't achieve those things, you don't get the things. Whoa, failure, I think, is being in a place where you're entrapped by your own behaviors and thinking, but you're not looking to find a way out. I for me, failure would be that I stayed somewhere that I didn't want to be.
Yeah, so it's rather failing yourself, failing to really honour you
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think failing to admit that there's an issue with something, failing to communicate with someone that you really need to, failing to, you know, identify that there's things that need to be changed or fixed within you. I mean, it comes up in every way if you don't pay attention, if you have, you know, little things, addictions and habits. And I think for me, failure is not being able to honour yourself, exactly as you said, yeah, and do the right things to give you more peace and more joy and more. And it's a continuum, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Never perfect.
No. Daily failure, let me tell you.
Yeah. Sometimes before I get from my bed to the bathroom, I go, oh, God.
I've already failed.
I was supposed to be up an hour ago and I wanted to go to the gym and I wanted to do, yeah, no.
Totally. Okay, so now we're going to move into some more happy moments. But first, what does, you know, we've talked earlier about that evil bitch and, you know, I think you might have even mentioned it already, but let's just go there again. What does the recurring evil bitch in your head say on repeat?
Yeah. There's probably a track that says you can't manage, you can't cope. I think it's that overwhelm pattern that got into my head. I think there's I had lots a couple of years ago and they've slowly gone. And now I love that. Now, darling. And there, darling. It's okay. I remember Tam's beautiful voice saying that to me and I can hear her voice in my head and it's like a parent just doing that all the time and it reparents that voice until, you know, you don't have the nasty voices left. But I think it just says, yeah, you're not going to manage. You haven't done enough. You're not enough. That would be it. And you're a bad cook. You can't cook.
Mine
don't
says
cook.
That too. Fuck off. Yeah, I know.
I know.
But here's the thing, like, you know, I really liked, you know, before we were talking about neural pathways and that whole, hey there, it's okay, that can be a new neural pathway that you create. You don't have to always go to that voice that tells you you're a dickhead or you're, you know, you're not capable or you're whatever it's saying to you. You can, as soon as you can become aware of it, you can change that to some other record. You know, you're just changing the record.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, cool. Okay, so now we will move officially on to the more light, fluffy stuff. What has been a highlight so far?
I have so many. I mean, just each step that being able to have a clinic and work with patients is an incredible highlight. And then going through medical school as well and then working in different roles in the hospital to be in that position of incredible authority and not just power but privilege to be so involved in someone's most vulnerable times in their life. Like, that's such a highlight. I've got to be a part of the board of ACNEM, College of Nutritional Environmental Medicine, and I've been invited to speak at some really beautiful places. I love health retreat work and being a part of the team at Quest for Life last week, that was a huge, huge highlight and privilege for me. And I really hope to do a lot more of that emotional healing work with women, especially cancer survivors and even carers, the people who have really been touched by cancer, but they've had no opportunity to, you know, go through that themselves. They're really hurt. So that's been pretty awesome. I remember as a naturopath speaking at a general practice convention on a tricky topic of fibromyalgia, and I must have been crazy. I don't know why I would put myself in that position then. And, you know, they would have thrown tomatoes, I think, if they could have. I think in that, you know, there was two or three people who were touched then and had a different thought process. And, you know, in the 90s, that was pretty amazing. And now I can see these underlying standard general medical practices now taking on a lot of this integrative medicine and psychoimmunology and it's really growing moving forward. So I'm excited to be part of some of the colleges that are supporting that. So that's a big
I was actually good. That's I was actually going to mention that at the beginning of your story because I don't know what it's like elsewhere, but you know, I've always had a fear of doctors. And I've always felt resistance around taking medication and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And thankfully, touch wood, I've been a very healthy person throughout my life. I've had, you know, little things come up over time, hay fever, asthma, you know, I had glandular fever at one point. So I've had pneumonia at one point. So I've had things. Yeah. But overall, you know, I've lived a pretty healthy, happy life. But I've still had this, you know, fear of doctors. But now I have this doctor and I go there and he says to me, I said to him, I've got some nasal problems. And he was like, well, here, this, I'm not, you know, like I basically had a sore throat and felt really horrible. And he was like, well, you can drink apple cider vinegar in warm water. You can have a saline nasal spray. And, you know, like, and I was just like, thank you.
Yeah.
And take some zinc. Yeah. For God's sake, woman, awesome. Take some zinc, you know. And I wonder, like, have you seen a huge change over the years in your industry? Is there like a softening towards the more natural approach in general throughout the medical system? Or is it like kind of just scattered here and there? Because my friends were like, oh, duh, you live in Byron. Of course your doctor's going to be like that. But I've been to a lot of doctors in Byron who certainly aren't like that. So, you know, like, do you think it's something that's happening?
Definitely. Yeah, it is. And, yeah, you are in a little unique environment down there in Byron. You can see once funding changes, I think that's one of the critical things that you really have to identify, that there's a majority shift towards some of these practices. When they're looking at integrative medicine and supporting the associations and starting to teach now integrative medicine through the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, so they're using a modality, they actually give credit points to GPs now who do a lot of nutritional training, because we have to do so much training per year to keep our registration, so their points accumulated. The work we did in the late 90s was very criticised, argued, and there was a lot of force behind this is rubbish and it's taking advantage of patients and, you know, there's charlatans out there who are unqualified and, you know, they've tried all the arguments and it comes back that complementary medicine is very safe. It doesn't kill people and it only is a risk if people don't also have medical care where they get checked and they find, you know, critical illness where they leave it and they don't get identified. That's a problem. Doctors generally now know that, you know, 70-80% of patients seek some kind of nutritional or supportive therapy and they don't know anything about it and they want to know and they're seeing their patients get better. And I think that the people who are very vocal and opposing are probably more the minority now than the norm, which is really good.
Yeah, that's heartening. Last question. What do you do for you, like self-care, self-love? Do you have a little thing? I think we spoke briefly about it earlier, but is there something that you know, you do to show you that you're pretty cool?
I guess there's quite a few things that I've added, and more over that year that I was in a very bad way. I didn't even know where to start. Like, I used to gym and exercise a lot, but that, I think that was punishment as well. You're not thin enough, you're not pretty enough, you know, go run, go cycle, go. And it was always a challenge, you know, can you do this? Go and do that triathlon and see if you can do it. And so none of that was ever self-care. I think now it's the really simple things. It's, I know how much sleep I need and I have a rule that I have to be in bed by a certain time. I take out all the electronics around my room and sleep is critical. It's number one. And I think that's why I put my ebook together, which is very, very simple and basic, but it's 8 habits, you know, to implement. And they include magnesium salts in the bath, you know, refreshing your body with lemon juice and water in the morning and having enough water through the day. And then when you start to think about that question, what do you do for self-care? I think that that should be your whole and complete life. If you're doing something that is uncaring for yourself, you know, that should be the thing that you're looking at. Why are you putting this poison in your body? That's not caring. You wouldn't do that to your child. You know, why are you punishing yourself with exercise or excess work? Or, yeah, so I've tried and be really thoughtful about, you know, what we eat generally, the time that we spend together, the time we spend on leisure. There's not probably one simple thing that I could come up with that is my go-to, except a big bath. But it'd have to be, yeah, a bath with Epsom salts and oils. and a great chit chat with friends. Like, that's great. We always have to get together every few weeks and download and not censor and just blurt it all out and just feel really free and acknowledged and heard. Like, that's a beautiful self-care exercise.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Well, you can find me in clinic on the Gold Coast. So I've got a clinic in Southport and all the details are on my website. And it's www.drrachelwyndham.com or Dr. Rach for short, which is easier. My surname's really tricky to spell. So drrach.com.au. I've got a free ebook if you'd like to look at that just for self-care. It's beautiful. There's also a little section in there which is called Know Your Numbers. And I think that so few people are self-aware about, you know, the basics they need to know, their BMI and their blood pressure and getting all the percentage of body fat. And I think when you sit and go through a worksheet like that and identify what it is, where you're at the moment, it's like your GPS. You can kind of put a little position on you right now, because if you want to be at a certain place, you really can't get there until you work out where you are right here today. So that's really valuable. I get lots of great feedback about that. I'll be at Utopia Women's Wellness event, which is in Brisbane in November. And I've got a workshop on the Gold Coast coming up in a couple of weeks' time. So we do regular little workshops. That one will be at Mrs. Flannery's. That's about hormones and health. And hopefully coming up in 2016, we'll do a few three-day retreats. So that's really exciting. I can't wait to do that. So, yeah, everything's on my website, so you can find me there.
drrach.com.au.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
Wow, I never feel like I'm the sage type that can speak in, but oh, what an opportunity. Thank you. I would like everyone listening to just sit and think that if I could get rid of this self-talk and really truly believe that I'm absolutely enough just today, exactly as I am. And if you're not quite there yet, then go hunting, go searching, like be an explorer. Don't give up until you look deep, deep. And that can be just physically, that can be at your diet, that can be, you know, at your nutrient deficiencies. Maybe you have some amino acids that are a bit out of whack, making your brain crazy. But yeah, go asking. Find a really good team of practitioners. There's not just one practitioner that can help you. You know, you put a coach together with a good naturopath and have a good, safe GP that's open-minded. And you need a team of those people, go-to people that can help you through all the stages, you know, of health. So you're enough. If you're not quite there, go hunting and find it.
Cool. Thank you so much. That was a great conversation.
Oh, I love talking to you. Thanks, Carly.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.